Good afternoon. I am Randy Fiorini, Chairman of the Delta Stewardship Council, and it's my honor to welcome you all to the second Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee meeting. If it's okay with you, I'm going to refer to it and suggest that you refer to this meeting as DPIC, because Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee will use up too much time.
If we use an acronym or overuse it, we will be drummed out of the administration. So,
well, for those of you that can risk it or have been authorized to, this is the DPIC meeting. Welcome, committee members. Welcome those who are in attendance here at the Plaza, the Capitol Plaza Holiday Inn, and welcome to all of those of you who are following along on the webcast today. The purpose of the meeting is to bring together high-level leaders of state, federal, local agencies to further coordinate progress towards achieving the co-equal goals. The Delta Reform Act, in support of the Delta Plan, the California Water Action Plan, have required the Delta Stewardship Council to establish and convene a committee of agencies responsible for implementing the Delta Plan. That's why we are here today. Our first meeting was held in April, and just a brief reminder, during that meeting, Secretary John Laird gave us an overview of the California Water Action Plan. Director David Murillo provided a review of the federal investments in the Bay Delta region from the federal point of view. The Delta Plan and the Delta Levees investment strategy was reviewed for you by our Chief Deputy, Dan Ray. A storage study was highlighted for you by Joe Byrne, Chairman of the California Water Commission. The Delta Restoration Network and the Restoration Hub was presented by Campbell Ingram, Executive Officer of the Delta Conservancy. And our lead scientist, Dr. Peter Goodwin, provided us an overview of the Delta Science Plan. The conversation around the table is summarized in your binders under File Item 2, Attachment 1. I'm not going to go over the details of that, only to say that the outcomes from that conversation serve to set today's agenda, along with a number of very important things that have transpired since that time. Today, we will review a lot of the progress that's been made. We will hear about the water bond that's passed, groundbreaking groundwater legislation that has passed. The water storage studies that were highlighted at the last time have been completed, and the first ever covered action habitat restoration project is now underway in the Delta. A lot to celebrate. The agenda is going to be full. I expect that file item number 3 will deserve the bulk of the conversation around the table. I will do my level best to guide our conversations to allow plenty of time to address those issues that are most important to you. And with that, I would like to, before we go around the table for introductions, I would like to mention that we have added another agency participate as a core member of this agency, and that is the USGS. Mark Soge, Regional Director, is the representative here today. It was recognized after our April meeting that science is such an important component of the work that we all do. It was remiss of us to not have the federal agency's lead science agency present at the table. So, Mark, welcome. And with that, I'd like to begin with self-introductions, beginning at my far right. Bill? There's a button at the base of the microphone you'll have to push to red light on. Good.
Thanks, Randy. My name's Bill Edgar. I'm the president of the State Flood Protection Board.
Felicia Marcus, chair of the State Water Resources Control Board.
Mary Pifo, a member of the Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors and vice chair of the Delta Protection Commission.
Good afternoon. I'm Jane Diamond. I'm the water director at US EPA Region 9, standing in for Regional Administrator Jared Blumenfeld, who couldn't be here today.
Peter Goodwin, lead scientist with the Delta Science Program.
As Randy mentioned, I'm Mark Sogi. I'm the Pacific Regional Director for USGS.
Karen Ross, Secretary of Food and Agriculture.
Letty Beelan, Senior Counselor, the Deputy Secretary of the Interior, Mike Connor, who unfortunately couldn't be here today.
And John Laird, Secretary for Natural Resources.
Hi, I'm Jason Phillips, Deputy Regional Director for Bureau of Reclamation, Mid-Pacific Region.
My name is Will Stell, and I'm Regional Director for NOAA Fisheries and the West Coast.
My name is Chuck Bonham. I'm the Director of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Campbell Ingram, Executive Officer of the Delta Conservancy.
Dan Castleberry, Assistant Regional Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service here for Wren Lohefner.
Gordon Burns, Undersecretary of Cal EPA, standing in for Matt Rodriguez, the Secretary.
Mark Kellen, Director, California Water Resources.
Mike Nepstad, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate your expressions of support by being here, and we pledge to try and make this meeting something that you will find very beneficial and helpful to the work that the important work that each of your agencies is tasked with. First, a few housekeeping items. There are a number of handouts at your station. Some of them are updated PowerPoints. Some of them are new to what was handed out that you received in your binders. For those of you following along, any changes to the initial distribution that occurred 10 days ago will be updated, and everything that is discussed here today will be posted on the Delta Council website. One item. There is coffee and iced tea available for committee members. I call it to your attention because one of the oddities of state government is state government doesn't pay for things like that. So Randy Fiorini has provided the coffee and the iced tea, and I don't want that to become a stranded investment today. So empty those suckers, please. Now, file item number two. I would like to call on Taryn Ravazzini, our implementation coordinator, to go over what you will find under the tab Agenda Item 2. She's going to highlight the guiding principles and the committee charge and objectives that have been updated for your review. Taryn, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, committee members. It's such an honor to be in front of you today. Thank you very much for joining us in this effort. If I could draw your attention to the guiding principles proposed draft document that is agenda item 2, attachment 1. Actually, excuse me, attachment 2. What we have done based on the April meeting, which was the inaugural meeting of this committee, was to craft a general framework on which committee actions may be based. This document is intended to reflect the collective vision of the committee membership. Thus, it is a proposed draft for your consideration. The initial draft language was reviewed and very well received by engaged key staff liaisons. And at this point, the council, it's very important to note that the Delta Stewardship Council views it as very important for the committee design and for the committee to design and utilize this forum as best fits the interest of its members. And that is all intended to support integration and coordination of multi-plan implementation. The committee charge and objectives that were provided to the committee by the Delta Stewardship Council is the attachment beneath that document. And this proposed draft guiding principle document is trying to build on that the charge and the objectives, while at the same time maintaining flexibility for the member agencies. If I may, this is a document that you are free to accept as a working document today. I'm going to leave that in the hands of the chair to direct the conversation around the table, but the key points of the general framework are on the first page of that document for you.
Taryn, thank you very much. Any questions of Taryn? If not, then thank you very much. And I'm glad that Taryn was able to kick this off with the first significant agenda item, because this is the person who is responsible for the coordination activities. You have all met her and worked with her in developing, further developing the work and the progress we make. So, Taryn, thank you for all your efforts, and I'll try not to let staff down. Unless there's any heartburn, we're going to proceed as if this is the guiding document that outlines how we will operate. We're not a voting body, so we thought it was important to identify some framework for this organization. So with that, we'll move on then to file item number 3. And this is the meat and potatoes of today's discussion. The implementation of the Delta Plan requires a high degree of coordination between state, federal, and local agencies. There is an interaction between the Delta Plan, the California Water Action Plan, the recently updated California Water Plan, and the federal investment strategies. We highlighted the California Water Action Plan last month, and it is a document that has already achieved some great successes. So we have two presenters lined up for you today. First, Janelle Beeland is the Undersecretary of the California Natural Resources Agency and has been the quarterback of implementing the California Water Action Plan. So we're pleased to have her with us to provide you an update. And then we also have Chris Chernell, who will immediately follow Janelle's presentation. Chris is the Special Assistant on Water Policy for the California Natural Resources Agency and is going to give us an update on discussions that occurred in April about the need to further coordinate activities in the Yolo Bypass. So with that, Janelle, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here this afternoon. Thanks for the clarification, Randy. I wasn't sure if I was the meat or the potatoes. So I appreciate that very much. If we can go ahead and put the PowerPoint up, I'm going to run through it a little quickly and then assume that you're all going to have questions as we go along. But it is a little bit long, and I want to make sure that we have enough time here for everybody to participate. As Randy said, we did talk about this initially and sort of lay out the plan and the overall sort of objectives of it at the last meeting. And I think we started with the fact that in about July, August of last year, the administration sort of decided we needed to get together to formulate what would be our guiding principles for how we're going to manage to more sustainable and reliable water supply in California. And that was embodied in the Water Action Plan. So the three cabinet secretaries, most of the state agencies that are on this body participated in the formulation and wrote the plan. It was a lot of coordination. It took us about 3 months. And then we released it publicly in draft form in late November. And then took some public comments, did some amendments and revisions based on a lot of good input that we received from other agencies in the state and also some of our federal partners. And so really helped to make the document sort of the living, breathing thing that it is today. And as I said, we released finally in January the final plan with much fanfare. And it was guided, it was a multi-agency effort guided by a lot of input over the years, over the months. It does serve as the roadmap for the Brown administration on water policy. Many of the decisions involving water policy over the last year are the result of working towards implementing the Water Action Plan. And we plan to continue as an administration to use this policy document as the one that will help shape our water policy decisions over the next 4 years. We are required through budget language to provide a report to the legislature in January, right around the time of our budget. We have to submit to the fiscal committees and the chairs of the policy committees describing what our strategy is and how we're going to move forward, what actions we're going to take, expectations for funding, plans for funding, and how we're going to make this more of a reality. We're off to a really spectacular start. I think you will see from this slide, the governor's 2014-15 budget provided $709 million in funding priorities for the Water Action Plan, and we're laying with that, with those actions, you know, the fiscal foundation for implementing the near-term actions. The plan itself was designed to for us to undertake actions that we can either implement or finish within the next 5 years. So we are on a fast track here, trying to get things off. And I think we made a substantial start here in this last fiscal year in the budget, and actually mostly in the last 6 to 8 months since we released the plan in January. We did accelerate $617 million of the funds for drought response, and there was an additional $66 million for additional actions in the budget that supported the Water Action Plan, and we've also brought some cap and trade funds in through DFW for watershed restoration activities. And all of these things serve to support the bullets that you see underneath the main 10 actions in the plan. We did, with the most of the $600 million in the drought legislation was focused on accelerating the integrated regional water management grants, and the Department of Water Resources has awarded, as of last month, the first $221 million that was accelerated and sort of reorganized to address serious drought situations around the state and fund projects. About over 100 regional and local drought projects that can be used to leverage local dollars. We're thinking on about a 3-to-1 basis. And this expedited process was helped out through the legislation and also the good work of the people at the staff at the Department of Water Resources. This is, IRWM program has had a lot of scrutiny because there have been fits and starts and some limitations in the way bond language has been written, but it was a lot of effort by everyone to make sure that we could make it as flexible as possible to meet the needs that are out there. And the needs, I don't know the number off the top of my head, and maybe Mark does, but the amount of applications that we got for what we had available was way in excess of what we were able to distribute. There is another $200 million that's going to go out by the spring for the second half of what was in the legislation. And this is dependent on grant applications and projects and readiness of those projects to hit the ground. And then just talking about one of the other actions in the Water Action Plan is the drought and some of the things that we've done over the past year to address the drought situation. I think almost everyone on the panel has been involved in our drought operations planning and what we're doing to address that. There were 3 executive orders from the governor this year to help move things along to sort of enhance the regulatory environment that we all work under, and a lot of coordination amongst the members of this body to make sure that we could address quickly and as easily as possible some of the drought situation. Water conservation also a big part of the Water Action Plan, and we have the state, and also it's coordinated with the Association of California Water Agencies. We've done a heavy push to do outreach and education to encourage conservation over this past year. A lot of advertising, a lot of billboards, big push through social media to raise awareness. And I don't know, Felicia, what the latest number was for what we've gotten for what we've achieved conservation-wise, somewhere around 11, in between 10 and 11% conservation statewide on average. Not yet at the 20%. Some communities have exceeded the 20% that the executive order has called for, but I think we don't see how that would have been possible without the big push that we've made as an administration on conservation and getting the word out and providing tools and education to enable local water agencies and others to help educate their consumers to meet some of these goals and objectives. So if you haven't been to the website, you ought to take a look at it. There are a lot of tools on there, and DWR maintains the website in coordination with the Association of California Water Agencies. As I said, there was a lot of work that was put into our drought operations and continues to be put into the drought operations with not spectacular forecasts coming from NOAA and others about what we might see in terms of rainfall. We're expected to continue our struggle with operations on the drought. But all of us working together to provide the kind of flexibility that, and as much as we can under some pretty stringent regulatory standards, and a lot of consternation with both the water agencies, agriculture, municipalities, everyone that's served by the state and federal water projects, and balancing all that with the need for protecting species and just conservation principles in general. We should probably just take a minute to have a big victory lap here. We did pass a water bond this year. It was no small undertaking. A lot of effort went into this, and it is a $7.45 billion water bond, the first one that we've had since 2006. Mostly competitive grant-based, but covers all of the principles in the Water Action Plan, and it's going to give us a lot of the foundational funding support that we're going to need going forward to accomplish many of the objectives of the Water Action Plan. And that slide is just a summary of the main chapters in the water bond to give everybody an idea of the overall. It doesn't really do justice to what it's going to take to do implementation and all of the planning and everything that is underway at this point to get through that money as quickly as possible. As I mentioned, one of the big principles in the Water Action Plan is increasing regional self-reliance and integrated water management, and that is fundamental to our IRWM program. We're working with the legislature to see if there are additional things that we can do to strengthen that program and simplify it and prioritize the money in a way that makes sense for both the department and the agencies that have to implement it as well. Another achievement I would put in implementation is the beginning of the implementation of the Delta Plan. We were directed to, in the Water Action Plan, to participate in this committee, so you guys are all part of implementing the Water Action Plan while you're here as well. And this has been an important organizing opportunity for us to all work together. There's a lot woven through the Water Action Plan about interagency coordination, and we're really seeing a lot of this come together, and I think a lot of credit is due to pulling this group together and having this form sort of the partnerships and the opportunities for conversations about how we can move forward together. We're seeing a lot of success across all of our departments and agencies and entities in coming up with unique ideas on how we can support each other and coordinate to achieve success of the Water Action Plan and also the Delta Plan and other things. Some other things that are underway with regard to the ecosystem restoration. There is a huge chapter in the Water Action Plan that relates to ecosystem restoration. We have at least three efforts currently underway. One of them is forest-related watershed management. There's an interagency group that started to convene to focus on landscape-level forest management and restoration efforts. And as I was just saying, it includes a lot of interagency coordination, something that we haven't really focused on as much in the past as we have started to now. And you'll see there that we have conservancies, the governor's office, our Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, Fish and Wildlife, the Resources Agency. We're including a few others into this effort as well. And the goal is to, you know, collaborate on landscape-level forest management and restoration projects that result in more resilient forests and forest health through better management of these systems. And also, this will allow us to, you know, the important piece is, I think, the way that we manage forests, you know, can often lead to better water quality. It can lead to better opportunities to capture and store water. If you have vegetation that's a little bit thinner and planned out better, we have more opportunities for the water that does come down to refill aquifers. So there's a lot of strategy and a lot of coordination that's going into this effort. Another effort that's underway, thanks to Will and his leadership, has brought together a group that is an interagency group that's convening to advance coastal watershed and estuarine restoration. And again, these are all sub bullets under the ecosystem restoration task in the Water Action Plan. And you'll see there again with the Coastal Conservancy, NOAA, US EPA, the Resources Agency, CDFW. We're starting to prioritize, as the Water Action Plan lays out, what watershed restoration work we can do together to maximize and leverage funding and to identify those geographic areas where we can combine and direct our expertise and resources to make these watersheds more effectively managed and get the most out of them for species and water quality, those important priorities. The Wildlife Conservation Board, another big point and bullet in the Water Action Plan, is formulating, and this was one of the trickier conversations during the bond, was how do we develop a platform for a competitive grant program that will result in enhanced stream flow and support multi-system, multi-benefit ecosystem restoration and watershed protection projects. And the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, as many of you know, has had success in this area in other states, and we're hoping to work together with them to affect this kind of change here in California and maybe get rid of some of the paranoia of things that happened in the past. I don't know if I want to say, well, I just said paranoia, but the fear of what this program has represented previously. I think we're going a long way towards changing what it's going to look like into the future. Another, you know, big pause and congratulations that we should take here is we passed historic groundwater legislation, also another big function and expectation of the Water Action Plan. Nearly, like Gordon, it was like 100 years to the day that we regulated surface water, that we managed to do groundwater regulation in California. And now the fun begins, apparently. And hopefully Gordon will have some more details on that. But I have three slides on this, and this is just the overview of the three bills. The main point of this legislation was to give communities and local jurisdictions the tools to sustainably manage their groundwater on their own, not for us as a state or a government to come in and take over basins, but to help equip communities and regional areas to come together in a way that would allow them to sustainably manage their groundwater. So the two key principles were, you know, as I just said, best managed at the regional and local level, and to provide the tools, and then also when they can't or aren't able to, or for the state to come in and assist them and get them on their feet. This would be a temporary intervention. It was always designed as temporary. We aren't interested at the state level in taking over groundwater basins and managing them, but to help work with communities to help them get to the right place. And then this is a lot of words on one slide, but these are kind of the key dates, and I think there's copies of the PowerPoint in the binder, so you can see kind of the schedule and the track that we're on that's laid out in the legislation. There'll be a lot of work done this year, cleanup and further expanding on some of the commitments that we made during the legislative session and working with the legislature on these. And then the Delta Stewardship Council is working with DWR and the Flood Protection Board and the Delta Protection Commission and local agencies to develop funding priorities for state investment in Delta levees. Also a significant piece of the Water Action Plan is better planning and prioritization for flood control, and a key point in the Delta Plan and a provision in the Delta Plan. And then, of course, that flows into our flood management and support of the Water Action Plan's call for multi-benefit projects and greater alignment of efforts between agencies in order for us to work together to align flood protection and habitat restoration projects in the Yolo Bypass and other places that are significant for species and also for communities and agricultural protection. And then I'll stop there and see if there are any questions, because Chris is going to further expand on our integration efforts on flood management.
Questions or comments for Janelle? Yes, Secretary Laird.
I definitely don't have a question. But I think I want to make a comment that is just global, because we last met at a time that so much of what was in that presentation hadn't been done yet. And, you know, one highly placed legislative assistant that we all know said when the Water Action Plan was released, it was all bones and there was no meat on it. And I think that more meat has been put on these bones in this period of time than I would have thought was possible last January when it was released. I think it's phenomenal. And it really was, whether it's the combined operations plan, the drought package, the groundwater legislation, the bond, the different pieces of implementation we've already heard about, it was most of the people around this table. And so there's a reason why a bunch of us are really tired right now. I was joking that when Janelle and I got out of the car in front of the Holiday Inn, the song they were playing was Running on Empty. And I thought, how did they know we were coming? But it's just been an incredible year of achievement. And in many ways, it's opportunity. And now we have to take advantage of the opportunity with all those implementation activities. But I just want to call attention. Somebody's been watching water in California for 45 years. It is every so often the window opens for action, and the window opened this year. So this is it was a matter-of-fact presentation, but it's amazing what was in it.
Good comments, and I echo that. It's sometimes you're surprised by success and don't know exactly how to react. And I like the idea of taking a victory lap, because the successes are significant and they really are evidence that through cooperative action and effectively communicating the problems and the solutions that significant changes can take place. So congratulations to everyone that's been involved in this. It is a remarkable success, but we're not stopping with that. So rest up. Mark, please.
Let me just expand upon the communication and the need for continued coordination. I'm tired, and I get tired thinking about all the work to be done to implement the legislation that was passed this year. It's a tremendous accomplishment, much work to be done to make it a true success. So short victory lap, and then we'll think about the longer victory lap as we actually do something with this these important tools. But this is just an opportunity for me to make a plea to everyone around the table and in the audience today to work with us to implement this important legislation. There's plenty of paranoia, I'll use the word, out there about how this might go down, any either expenditure of the bonds or implementation of the groundwater legislation or any of the other actions in the Water Action Plan. Don't believe every first rumor you hear. We're going to try to communicate as best we can, but we can never stay ahead of the rumor mill about decisions that have already been made or our intent. So stay tuned, work with us, and have patience as we roll out more detailed implementation plans for this legislation this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Other comments? All right. Well, let's send Janelle. Thank you very much. And let's move on to Chris. And what transpired out of this committee meeting in April, I think, was ignited by a comment that Bill Edgar made about his observation that there was a lot of activity underway in the Yolo Bypass, and it didn't seem to be as well coordinated as he would like to see it. That led to you receiving the task of investigating, and you've got a progress report for us today. So thank you, Chris, for coming. We look forward to hearing your report.
Indeed. Thank you. And I think it also led to me getting hired. So thank you, Mr. Edgar, for that action.
Yeah, it's probably some people in the crowd that want you to make more comments.
So it's a pleasure to be here. Again, Christopher Turnell, Special Assistant for Water Policy for the California Natural Resources Agency. I work very, very closely with Janelle and our team, of course, with the Secretary as well. So as much as I like having a single slide dedicated to my name, I'm going to move along to this one. So a key theme that runs throughout the California Water Action Plan, I really do want to couch this portion of the discussion, I'll try to keep it as brief as possible, within Janelle's larger presentation of Water Action Plan writ large, is this theme of integration and alignment and interagency coordination. And someone mentioned it earlier, working with all three levels of government, local, state, federal, different stakeholders. I think it's fair to say, and I will get into more of the details around this, but there are few opportunities, at least from my perspective, in the Delta right now, or maybe even in California, if I can be so bold, where the need, the opportunity, and the people who are involved are all aligned, if you will, to really get some good work done in the Yolo Bypass. So with that, I'll just kind of jump in here. So quickly, just a brief overview of what I'm going to go over here. Jan, talk about the Yolo Bypass, just the basics of it, just to orient all of us. I think that given that this is a Delta body that I'm speaking in front of, I think we all know significant amounts about the bypass, but I'm just going to go briefly over why it is so important, why it's there in the first place, and just going to go over some basics. I'm going to run through some of the multiple objectives that different folks, again, different levels of government, different stakeholders, what the different sorts of objectives that different perspectives bring when they think about the Yolo Bypass. Again, though, just brief overview of this, and it will not be comprehensive by any means. Some challenges with current trajectory, essentially saying that despite a truly tremendous amount of coordination and real effort over the past number of decades, frankly, at advancing really good projects in the bypass, whether they be flood control related or ecosystem restoration related, recreation related, et cetera. There is some room for more to be done in that realm, and I think that's exactly the opportunity that Mr. Edgar raised, that the chair referenced. So again, just to underscore that, there is some tremendously good work being done by fabulous staff at all levels. It's focused on the bypass efforts, but there's always room for further success, and I think that the bypass is a place that really demands success. So, next slide here, just the YOLO basics, YOLO bypass, the basics. It was federally authorized in 1917 as a flood control facility. It is first and foremost a flood control facility. Just orienting us geographically, it's directly to the west of the Sacramento metropolitan area. It is roughly 60,000 acres in size as it currently is today. Roughly two-thirds in private ownership, one-third in public. The majority of the public land, I believe, is the Vic Fazio Wildlife Refuge and some other lands that are around that area. Just to sum up briefly, kind of give you a sense for the overall importance of the facility when it comes to flood protection. In major storm events, as that comes barreling down the Sacramento River, roughly 80% of those flows spill over the Fremont Weir and are conveyed safely, if you will, through the bypass as opposed to through the more channelized Sacramento River that runs directly adjacent to very important agricultural lands and urban areas. It's a wildly important wildlife habitat for a number of fish species and upland species. It's a critical link in the Pacific Flyway, so very important for migratory waterfowl and other birds. And of course, it is a highly productive agricultural center for both Yolo and Solano counties. So just really briefly, just wanted to just touch on, and again, I think we're pretty aware of these items, but really want to touch on big picture restoration objectives for the bypass. And I would just urge you to not pay too much attention to the particular graphic there. All that's really trying to get across is that when we are talking about the biological opinions that are required for the ongoing operation of the state and federal water projects, and when we're talking about eventual implementation of the Bay Delta Conservation Planning process, and in particular Conservation Measure 2, which is focused on the bypass, of course, that what we're talking about are pretty significant uses of that land that are different than they are used today. That's not to say that they're going to be mutually exclusive at all with current land uses. That's not the point. In fact, we think there's lots of opportunities for achieving both objectives, and I'll get into this more, of course, but of existing agricultural use and ecosystem restoration. But the graphic, just to be clear, is just some old preliminary data, and I just wanted to put it up there to represent that when we're talking about, in particular, increasing the inundation regime for the bypass, it will have, I think it is safe to say, some impacts on that region and some impacts on the agricultural production in the area. So very big challenges, both fish passage, which will probably involve a modification of the Fremont Weir, may involve issues related to the Sacramento Weir, and then a greater flood inundation regime of some sort. And the acreage that we're talking about there is, again, significant, especially when compared to the overall size, which was, again, around 59,000 or 60,000 acres. Same map, but this time overlaid with the state flood objectives. And again, I want to just heavily caveat this with this is just preliminary concepts for flood projects in the bypass. So what you're looking at here, again, is the bypass, of course. And in the yellow areas, you have the areas that are currently being thought of, at least conceptually, for potential areas for increasing the flood conveyance capacity of the bypass. Again, we're looking at relatively significant, relative to the size of the overall bypass, land use alterations. along the order of 10,000 to 18,000 acres. Again, very preliminary, but that's the rough scale that we're talking about when Department of Water Resources, Flood Management, is considering the needs to increase the capacity of the bypass for both current conditions to help alleviate current stresses on the flood management system, and then also looking ahead the next 50, 100, 150 years towards the effects of climate change and just the need to convey more water through the bypass than we are doing so today. This is the last map slide that I will show, I believe. And again, just wanted to underscore, not comprehensive, but it is a representation of a smattering of some of the local and regional concepts that have arisen. Everything from the idea of relocating certain rail lines that either crisscross the bypass currently or are otherwise in the same region and, if relocated, could provide certain flood protection benefits to some of the surrounding urban areas. Another big issue bubbling up from the local and regional conversations, of which there are several, and I'll get into that in a second, is this idea of low-impact restoration. I mentioned earlier Yolo Bypass is a very strong agricultural center. There is, of course, and as is reasonable, the interest in when we do restoration in the Delta, doing so in a way that that retains the sustainability as much as possible for the local agricultural economy. And there's also an interest when we're talking about these issues and in these more local and regional forums in looking at the permitting mechanisms and the permitting process for the biological opinion in particular as potentially a mix of project level and programmatic permitting. Again, I think this gets more to the issue of an interest in a phased approach that is thoughtful is certainly nothing that I think is in thematic contradiction to what we are interested in seeing there as well. But again, an idea of maybe a stepwise approach to restoration and the bypass in particular. There's various forums that some of these issues are currently bubbling up in. There's a regional flood management planning process, which is part of at least partially state-sponsored local and regional effort to put together and combine local perspectives on flood management interests in this area. There, out of that effort, there has been a process, and I won't get the full name, but it's the Integrated Water Management Plan or planning process that's really being led by Yolo County, Solano County, other stakeholders that are, again, in many ways a subset of those involved in the regional planning process. And then I just have bolded here the Bureau of Reclamation's value planning process, another local forum, or not local forum rather, but a federally sponsored forum that has just recently completed its work. There was a briefing on October 31st to some of the state and federal agencies that wanted to and need to incorporate some of the feedback that came from this value planning process. But essentially what it was a group of local and regional interests, and to an extent with state and federal interests as well in the room, coming up with concepts for, as the state and federal agencies move forward on the biological opinion process specifically, what are ways to both do that and at the same time really achieve local, regional interests. So really that, what are some local perspectives for balancing those processes and those outcomes? And the only reason why I want to underscore, or in this case highlight this forum, is because I think that it really served as a wake-up call, I think, in many ways, to a lot of the folks who were involved in that process, and it certainly did for me as well. And that was that there is actually a way, at least conceptually, to do in the bypass ecosystem restoration on the scale that we are doing so that also achieves state, local, regional flood management objectives and that preserves an ongoing productivity of the Yolo Bypass as an agricultural center for California, or rather, at least for that county. And so it was a very creative process. A lot of good ideas bubbled up from that. And I think it really just, especially at the resources agency level, really cemented again our interest in taking another look at where are the different opportunities in the bypass for integration alignment. But again, go beyond the really good, as I underscored earlier, coordination efforts that are, of course, happening every day between agencies at the various levels of government. Wrong button. This next slide here, again, apologies to the audience, and maybe even for those who have it in front of you, pretty small writing here, but this is more of a visual, actually, just to get across. And this is just a subset of those, the current planning processes and implementation processes that are currently planned for the Yola bypass. That's on the left-hand column. And the more visual kind of Gantt chart part of this is just a representation of where all these planning processes are in their current schedule. And again, big picture, all I really want to get across in this chart is A, there is a lot going on. B, they're not all the same thing. There's a lot of different flood projects going on. Just to reiterate them, there's federal interests in the bypass, state flood management interests, local and regional interests. There's biological planning processes, Bay Delta conservation planning process, of course, biological opinion process, or biological opinion implementation and planning. There's others as well. And again, all the timelines aren't, and they weren't designed to do so, so this is not a criticism, but they are not, in general, aligned with each other to make alignment and integration as obvious as I think that we would all like it to be in a perfect world. So this next slide is just a summary of current challenges that really just... I've already covered, but just to go over them again, actually I didn't mention a few of these. Permitting, I think it's very clear when you're doing any sort of a project, especially an ecosystem restoration project in a flood conveyance area, you have to take, in some ways first and foremost, flood considerations into consideration. And of course you also have the agricultural impacts you have to deal with. So there's Army Corps of Engineering permitting processes that you have to go through. And this, of course, isn't just for the ecosystem restoration projects that we're contemplating, but, of course, the flood projects themselves have to go through these processes. Central Valley Flood Protection Board permits, CESA, ESA, water quality from the state and federal, or state and regional water quality control boards. Very complex permitting, to put it very lightly. And I know that we're all aware of this here, but I just want to underscore that You have ecosystem restoration projects. They're going to have to take into consideration, in many ways before other considerations, flood impacts. And you have flood projects that are going to be meet very stringent ESA and CESA species-related impacts. You have financing challenges. Right now, looking at flood projects just in their own silo, looking at just habitat restoration projects in their own perspective alone, looking at recreational opportunities solely from the perspective of what's available for financing from the recreational side, pretty limited. Local resistance and needs, I went into this a little bit. It makes sense. It is of no surprise, and it can be expected that that when we are talking about projects, whether they be ecosystem restoration or flood conveyance capacity increase projects, in an area that has been so central to both the economics and the culture, if you will, of Yolo County and Solano County, that there's going to be potential for resistance. I will also underscore, and I'll get to this again, there's also an amazing opportunity for partnership there as well, but I'll get into that. Non-coordinated land acquisition, this is just to highlight that again, something I think we're pretty all aware of. Land acquisition is oftentimes the most challenging portion of a project, whether it's flood improvement or habitat restoration. And right now, we may be missing opportunities to see where a single acquisition, if done in coordination between the flood side of the house, the habitat restoration side of the house, if you will, could have overlapping objectives met by a single project, or at least in a coordinated set of projects. And restoration timelines, I think the one I will mention here, there's several, but the state and federal government are under through Bureau of Reclamation are under pretty strict timelines when it comes to the implementation of the biological opinion. And so that is another driving challenge that we are faced with on a day-to-day basis. So pulling it back a little bit from some of the details, and to put it in context for this group, Janelle mentioned the California Water Action Plan and how it is really the driving document for California state government as it relates to water management now. And you also have the Delta Stewardship Council's habitat issue paper that I believe is in your packet. There's some interesting commonalities between these two, and that's, I think, no mistake. But these ideas of pursuing regionally integrated flood projects, no longer looking at them just solely from a local perspective, or rather a very limited geographic perspective. The importance of integrating habitat and flood planning to maximize public benefits. The push in the Water Action Plan to implement near-term projects in the Yola Bypass to get that going, with the understanding that we're going to have to be doing that anyway along the line. It's going to be a very long process, very difficult process. So what are some of the near-term projects that we can get done? So the Water Action Plan really provides that push for state agencies at least to get working on that. In the Stewardship Council's habitat issue paper, some similar themes came up. Enhance the Yola Bypass to provide floodplain habitat and fish passage. Address stakeholder and landowner concerns to avoid conflicts. This is a really key one. It wasn't explicitly stated in the Water Action Plan, but it was certainly there thematically with this idea of alignment, integration, coordination. And lastly, focusing restoration conversations to avoid redundancy. Just kind of gets at that idea of there is a lot of effort being put into the bypass, hugely important, and we have limited resources. So what is the best way to move forward successfully? Okay, so this next slide, it's really just supposed to be an easily digestible visual, but I'll kind of walk through it here. Along the top line, you have represented the more locally driven regional flood management planning process, which is really for in this case, for the lower Sacramento River region and North Delta area. You have the state Central Valley Plan of Flood Control, or rather Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. I always get that wrong. Document that's really the big picture statewide backbone flood protection document and plan. Out of that, you have coming the state-driven basin-wide feasibility studies, which are really getting down to the nuts and bolts of flood management improvements in the bypass and across the Central Valley. You have federal interests, which include the whole American River, Folsom Dam, and Sac Weir projects, of course. And you have the state and federal biological opinion, and you have the Conservation Measure 2 from the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. So one of the basic ideas, and this is really the effort that I'm here to just to say that is beginning in earnest at the state level, and we really look forward to working more with our federal and local partners, is this basic idea of, given that there are all these, in some ways, disparate, and I don't mean to be overly harsh with that word, but just to be very clear, in many ways, disparate efforts that are out there, and again, that's largely by nature, that there are flood projects and habitat restoration projects. Is it possible to have a conversation, a single conversation, to really minimize and focus the conversation that right now, as I mentioned earlier, is happening in many different forms? I only mentioned three of them, but there's really many different forms out there that these ideas are percolating and coming together. Is it possible to pull, essentially, from that top line of planning documents and planning efforts, those projects, those concepts, those objectives that deal with the bypass in some way, again, irrespective of their outcome, whether they are with flood-based or habitat restoration-based, recreation, agricultural preservation, et cetera, and essentially pull those from those documents, from those efforts, and have a single coordinated conversation of some sort. And this is kind of where we are at in our thinking here. It's what does that look like? What does that conversation look like? And to make sure that they're by way of a single conversation, that we are not missing a single opportunity for identifying and ultimately implementing projects that maybe have both flood benefits and ecosystem restoration benefits, possibly even recreation benefits, certainly local economic sustainability benefits, et cetera. So if you just kind of keep that image in your head there of that last slide, this next one is just going over some of these benefits again. The idea would be to, assuming that all these projects, because they have such a tremendous challenge ahead of them with permitting, just as a single example, I think that it's pretty safe to say that if we have a conversation with both flood objectives and ideas and concepts and ecosystem restoration in the same room, we may actually be able to have and develop projects that by nature have flood benefits and therefore can provide tremendous opportunities for potentially more smooth transition through the permitting process, at least as it relates to the flood permitting side. Second bullet, new partnerships with local government and stakeholders. I think this goes without mention, but I think I do want to underscore it. Everything we can do, every opportunity that we at the state can do to reach out and form better partnerships, better functioning partnerships, where we can really take advantage of the creativity, in hopefully many cases, the financial capacity, and just the creativity of the local and regional perspectives. We need to be taking advantage of that. And I think this kind of a conversation, we're really putting everything on the table to look for those partnership opportunities would help achieve that. Again, a single forum for discussion. I don't need to cover that again. Broadened financing strategy, as opposed to if I was a flood proponent going out and just looking at what flood money is available, if I was an ecosystem restoration proponent looking at just what money is available for my particular needs, I think that you are missing, or in that case, I would be missing, a tremendous opportunity for looking at where some of those subjectives directly overlap, where we can leverage each other's finances that we bring to the table, and again, at the local, state, and federal level. Coordinated land acquisition, I think that goes without, it doesn't need too much explanation to the extent that that might be necessary. And maybe just finally, a proof of concept for what's possible in the Delta. I think that just thematically, it is really completely aligned what I'm talking about and what the state is starting to think about and what we look forward to reaching out and working with our federal partners and local partners on and other stakeholders. Is this idea of opportunities for alignment and where can we really put some points on the board in the Delta? Where is a big project that isn't so small that it is of little interest per se outside of these conversations, but it's large enough to have real gravitas with it if successful, but it's also reasonable and manageable enough to get done in the near future in some way so that can be exportable to the larger Delta conversation and hopefully to the larger ecosystem restoration conversations across California and flood management risk and flood risk reduction conversations across California. So that is the overview. Happy to take any questions, but just really briefly to kind of sum up, this is really taking the charge that we've been given from the California Water Action Plan from the Delta Stewardship Council, and thank you for your leadership on that, and from many, many, many different folks at all different levels to start think differently, to start think differently about how these different interests and objectives, planning processes, et cetera, can work together to truly achieve everybody's objectives, and maybe even more so than we thought possible when doing it just by ourselves. And I think that's really the key to integration and alignment, and I'm certainly very excited to be working on this project, and like I said, very much look forward to working and reaching out in more detail to our federal partners and local partners and other stakeholders. So thank you.
Chris, thank you. You've done an amazing job of pulling all this information together in a way that can be analyzed, and I hope that it generates a little bit of conversation around this table. Anyone wish to offer comments? Or Mary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I did want to take a moment not only to recognize Chris's work, but maybe give him another job. Chris, we at the last DPIC meeting, I use the acronym, I presented an item of consideration under this august body regarding invasive aquatic weeds within the Delta as a whole. And I would request again, Mr. Chairman, consideration of adding this to our focused priority discussion items moving forward, or a work group topic, and sort of the same approach, Chris, to get every agency that has a role policy-wise and possibly even revenue-wise to address invasive aquatic weeds within the Delta. They're both submerged and surface. And as we've seen in the news recently, the water hyacinth is really easy to see because it's a surface weed. It's the Agaria densa and others that are submerged that are really hard to see and don't get the media's attention and oftentimes don't get the public's attention. Supervisor, San Joaquin County Supervisor Larry Rustaller brought the issue up before this body in January of this year. He and I have been working on trying to gain additional attention. We had a meeting most recently with Secretary Ross, and she and Secretary Laird provided a generous letter to the federal government, Department of Ag, to continue funding for the Agricultural Research Service efforts on creating an area-wide pest management plan. And I would like to encourage the folks at this table and within the audience to join forces, because we do have the need also on this issue. We have the opportunity. It's a multiple stakeholder interest problem, and similar, if not identical, circumstances, and we need greater engagement as well. I did present to the committee members a packet of information on this issue. There are also additional copies up front, and we've provided it to Stewardship Council staff, Mr. Chairman, for future reference. But again, we'd like to add this to the to-do list of things that we might be able to consider moving forward. Thank you.
Supervisor Pifo, thank you very much. And we can take this up further under file item 5 when we talk about next steps. But I want to echo my appreciation to Secretaries Ross and Laird for weighing in on this important issue. It's very meaningful to every aspect of the Delta in terms of a challenge that they face daily. So thank you. Bill.
Chris and Janelle, that's really a great piece of work you did, and it's exactly what I was afraid of. You found and have produced a solution, which or at least a concept that we need to move to, which I'm really pleased about. One of the things that I think we're going to be facing as we move to this new paradigm is we're all faced with limited resources. Our staffs are spending a lot of time in producing reports and going to coordination meetings and so on. And I think as we migrate to this new idea or this new paradigm that you pointed out in your presentation, from coordination to integration, as Janelle pointed out in her water plan and Chris in the work you're doing in the Yolo Bypass, I think there needs to be a way in which we can refocus all of these coordination meetings, all of these committee meetings, or eliminate them or combine them, because we can't be doing both. We've got to refocus our efforts on integration and migrating from all of these coordinating efforts. So I think, and I'm not sure how it works, but there needs to be some sort of a clearinghouse or whatever that can look at all the coordinating committees, see which ones can be combined, see which ones can go away, see which ones can be changed, and focus on the ones that really get to the concept that you've outlined today. And I don't know how to do that, but we can't, I don't think we have the resources to do both. We can't sit in all these coordinating committee meetings and also do the integrating meetings. We've got to get rid of some of the stuff that we're doing now, it seems to me.
Thanks, Bill. Others? Chris, we understand this is a work in progress. This is a status report. A couple of things, and my response is one, it's great work. Two, there are 6 high-priority restoration areas identified in the Delta, and your suggestion that the work you're doing is leading towards establishing a model for how to integrate multi-benefit activities in the Yolo Bypass is a good goal. You ask, can we create a single conversation about the Yolo Bypass? I would say not only can we, but we must. And suggestions along the lines of Bill's and the work you're doing is, I think, going to get us there. We're going to be meeting again in April. What can we expect to hear from you then?
If I don't have significantly more to say in April, I think that I might be looking for another job pretty soon. So what I would like to come back to this group with by April, I would say at the very least, is with some specific proposals, some specific concepts that have been by then, of course, worked out not only within the state family, but assuming that we can also work very closely with our federal partners, with local partners, other stakeholders, and kind of test the waters on this idea and what that would really look like. What kind of a conversation would that really be? What is that mechanism that would be in support of that effort? And if those, you know, testing the waters, if you will, type conversations yield interest, which I certainly hope that they do, I would like to, by April, be able to come back and have a significantly more detailed conversation with this body about next steps and receiving your input as well.
Okay. So. Great. Well, the Stewardship Council stands at the ready to assist in any way that we can.
And, thank you.
Great work so far.
Thanks.
Janelle, Chris, thank you very much. That concludes file item 3A. Any public comment? We have a blue slip of paper that we'll ask you to fill out with your name. And in the interest of time, we'd ask that comments be brief today. That's right. You can fill that out after you've completed your... Please identify. That's fine. Sit there. It's fine. Yes. Either way. Identify yourself and...
Thank you, Chair Fiore, members of the committee. Apologize, I haven't commented before this committee before. My name is Petrea Marchand, and I am commenting on behalf of the Yolo County Board of Supervisors. I just wanted to express support today to the committee for the efforts to integrate the various efforts that are ongoing in the Yolo Bypass. That's extremely important to the county, as well as, I think, to the state and federal agencies. We also are trying to track all of the various processes that affect the bypass, and we appreciate all the efforts thus far of the various agencies to coordinate with the county. I also want to thank Chris for pointing out some of the existing uses of the Yolo Bypass, including important habitat for terrestrial species as well as fish species, and the agriculture in the bypass that has long been a hallmark of Yolo County's heritage. And finally, I just wanted to add another layer of complexity to the discussions in the Yolo Bypass. As some of you know, including Director Bonham, Yolo County is pursuing a habitat conservation plan and a natural community conservation plan for 12 endangered terrestrial species, many of which have a home in the Yolo Bypass, including the giant garter snake. And so that is one more process that needs to be considered in this ongoing effort to integrate the various planning processes. So again, I wanted to reiterate Yolo County's support for integrating all these efforts and thank this committee for their attention to this important effort.
Great. Thank you. All right, moving on to item 3B, I have something I want to read. This is taken from an address that Governor Jerry Brown made on October 20th at Stanford University. He said, water is going to be a major issue that will be addressed in the California legislature, in Congress, and throughout communities everywhere, because water doesn't get solved in one office or in one place. Water issues are handled by a multitude of local agencies. They are handled by state rules and institutions and also by the federal government, so it's a complicated interplay of governmental jurisdictions at every level. It's a true statement. And the next item deals with policy-science interface. There is nowhere where the point of connection among all of the interests that you represent at this table come together than science. And so we've asked Dr. Peter Goodwin to come and provide us some updates based on the conversation that occurred in April. We share common needs and interests. science provides an opportunity for shared investments, and you acknowledged in April that the goal of one science, one Delta One science, is a worthy goal. So, and then I would be remiss if I didn't offer the federal view. On Tuesday, October 28th, Interior Deputy Secretary Mike Connor at the Bay Delta Science Conference emphasized the need to coordinate and cooperate among multiple agencies and reemphasized his commitment to the Delta and to a One Delta, One Science. So with that, Peter, please update us on activities, and I will call attention in advance. We're going to be asking you to support three specific actions at the end of this presentation.
Okay, well, thank you, Chair Fiorini, and good afternoon. And actually, I'd just like to make one comment that builds on what Janelle Bieland's mentioned. The fact that the three branches of government are working together in an unprecedented way to really take on these big issues. And I think I would also add that fourth branch of government, the rogue branch of science, because as Chair Fiorini mentioned, I think there's also an unprecedented desire from decision makers and senior managers to seek out the very best available science so that the best decisions can be made, the best description of future conditions can be given to the people of California. What I'm going to talk about here is really the response of the science community to that. And I think that from the science community level, this willingness to engage the science community has really resulted in discussions. How can we structure science to best inform policy? So before I get started, I should also point out the Delta Stewardship Council, we don't do science. We facilitate science. We build networks. We're often referred to as the honest brokers of science. And we take this very seriously. What we'd like to achieve today is two things. First is a cross-agency understanding of this report I'll be describing, the Interim Science Action Agenda. And secondly, we'd like your ideas and thoughts on what collaborative science opportunities can we move ahead immediately in 2015. A very brief refresher. The Delta Science Plan was completed in December 2013. It started with a town hall meeting that many of the people at the head of table here participated in, Director Mark Cowan, Chair Randy Fiorini, amongst others. And the question which was thrown out in that town hall meeting is, how do we transition from this era of combat science to collaborative science? And this resulted in the Delta Science Plan, which was given the acronym One Delta, One Science. This doesn't mean that everyone agrees on everything, but how do you structure science so legitimate differences in opinion can be explored in the scientific arena? The science plan also explored the three primary philosophies. How do you make science credible, legitimate, and relevant? Credible means that it stands up under scientific scrutiny. Legitimate means that all of the relevant parties that had expertise in the area contribute, and relevancy means, is it actually responding to the management questions that need to be acted on? As you recall from the previous meeting, there was well over 1,000 comments. Hundreds and hundreds of man-hours from right across the science community contributed to this. The science plan itself is a three-part strategy geared at developing best available science and a common body of knowledge. In this plan, it respects individual mandates and missions of agencies, but gets to the heart of comments made by the National Research Council in 2012 and the Independent Science Board that said there's world-class science going on many of the specific issues, but there's a lack of synthesis that builds a system's understanding across this incredibly dynamic and evolving system. So the purpose of the science plan was to develop synergy between the various parties. What we're going to be focused on today is the science action agenda. which is a work plan, and for the next 2 years. The third leg of the science plan is the state of Bay Delta science. The state of the Bay Delta science is the current understanding of what we know. So what we heard from the science community and managers is this should be an ongoing process. Science is a journey. So you have a work plan, you conduct science, you then document what we've learned from that science, and that helps guide the next work plan. So what is the interim science action agenda? This is a shared work plan, and for many of the agency directors sitting at the head of the table, you'll know that this is not easy. The Puget Sound Partnership, or the Puget Sound Partnership, completed their study in a little over 2.5 years, and that was the fastest work plan that we could detect that had been put together on a system of this scale. But fortunately, we had some great guidance. The California Water Action Plan came out at the beginning of the year, just as we were beginning to think about this. And you'll see reflected in the science action agenda many of the key action items within that water action plan. If you follow down through here, we also had the meeting in April where we received some very good guidance on encouragement to be bold and ideas on how we should seek input. We also have a science advisory committee that gave input and guidance on what it should look like, and we held a public workshop in May 2014. We'd also conducted a detailed analysis of science plans which are out there by agencies and programs, as well as many, many recommendations that had come from independent science reviews, including the National Research Council. What came out of that, in order to be current, that we needed to conduct focused interviews. And so with the output from that workshop, we conducted a series of very in-depth interviews in a structured way across programs and agencies. Following that, we had input from the IEP and the QEMP, the California Water Environmental Modeling Forum workshop. And we put out an interim science action agenda at the beginning of September. Following that, the Delta Independent Science Board weighed in, and so they took a very hard look at it and came out with a detailed memo with a lot of good guidance. We also received extensive public comment, more than 12 detailed letters and over 200 individual comments. And this has resulted in the interim science action agenda that's in your package today. So what actually is it? It's a report. In the appendix, you'll see there were over 320 individual science actions that were identified through this process. This is not intended to be comprehensive, but what we wanted to do was to get a good handle on the science scape, what's actually being done, what's actually needed. From those 320 science actions, we were able to synthesize those down to 17 primary areas. 12 of those address significant gaps in knowledge that are needed to manage this complex and rapidly evolving system. And 5 science action areas concentrated on building the infrastructure. What does it take to be more efficient? What does it take for scientists working in the system to work together more collaboratively to get the information they need? And all of this would lead to accelerated knowledge discovery. How do we think this is going to be used? Well, first and foremost, it builds our community of scientists. How do we get to this one Delta, one science ideal? Secondly, it's about building the collaborative science networks, and you as agency directors being able to show where your science fits in to this immensely complex system. And if you look at one of the appendix, there's an initial attempt at organizational network mapping that's used in some federal agencies and certainly in the private sector like Silicon Valley. So you'll see that a network mapping that links these priority areas to the various agencies that have a major stake in those actions. It also identifies opportunities for shared investments and multi-benefit science interests. What we heard a lot during the science conference was, this is a really useful document. I didn't know Agency X was doing that, and I certainly didn't know that this group of scientists also had common interests. Also, the Science Action Agenda will form the basis of a web-based tracking system for all science activities, building on some of the efforts of the USGS and the San Francisco Estuary Institute. And perhaps most importantly, this is a stepping stone toward the full Science Action Agenda, which will be completed in about 18 months. So, what are the opportunities provided by the Interim Science Action Agenda? First of all, today, we would like you to accept this Interim Science Action Agenda, recognizing that this is an important stepping stone to understanding the complex science your science scape. And we hope that this will be used as a collaborative roadmap for decision-relevant science in the future. Secondly, we would like you to engage in developing recommended priorities for 2015, particularly that address the cross-cutting science action areas identified by the National Research Council as being critically important. And within these, you'll find that there's a four-page document that highlights a few suggestions to perhaps start a discussion. These relate directly to the California Water Action Plan, particularly 3, 4, 5, and 9. So just to summarize these, some of the things which we've heard extensively from managers and from the science community themselves. There's some really excellent work going on right across the Bay Delta system to understand what's being collected in terms of monitoring data. And I won't list all of the groups that are working on that right now. What we're proposing is, once we know what's being collected, is to take a very hard look at the experimental design and particularly the statistical methods that might be used to make interpretation from the data that's being collected. Also to take a look into the future at new innovations in terms of monitoring data or analysis of monitoring data. So some of the questions that may come up about this is not so much to look back into the past, but look to the future. We don't know what the next major invasive species is likely to be, but we do know that we're going to have to undertake special studies that will be focused on and build on the current monitoring programs. So is the current monitoring framework that we've got adequate to the task? What are those critical gaps which we should be filling? The second thing which we're suggesting is that there is a selective joint proposal solicitation package. And this is really to help you as agency directors. Virtually every program is being required to justify the expenditure of scientific funds. So we're suggesting that there is a joint proposal not covering everything across the science landscape, but to join together in a collaborative proposal solicitation package so that the reviews can be more efficient. There can be coordinated questions, and we can see in one place how these science gaps which have been identified are being filled. We also expect that this PSP will help explore innovative technologies that could result in efficiencies in the future. And I should stress here that if this was to be done, the common part of it would be the scientific review. So it gives you confidence as an agency director that the science that's being done meets high scientific standards. But under NSF guidelines, there's this other thing called broader impacts. And the broader impacts is how does that inform the management decisions that you are going to be tasked with. So there would be this two level of peer review. Before we get into that discussion, we also wanted to give you a brief update of what's coming soon to a delta near you. And there's a few big activities coming up in 2015. The first item is, this came out very, very strongly during the development of the science plan, and many of your staff have been providing input, but we will be hosting a modeling summit that will advance integrated physical and ecosystem modeling system-wide. So how do we build on the brilliant modeling that's being undertaken right now to look at certain issues? How do we build our modeling ecosystem in order to translate information and data to those who most need it. Secondly, I mentioned the web-based tracking system, so it's easy to find who's doing what work, who are the contacts, and what are some of the main publications and deliverables coming out of that. Thirdly, you'll find in the back of your package information about the Science Fellows Program. This has been one of the most successful programs over the last decade that's undertaken. It's a program that links agencies and organizations with universities, certainly in California, but also across the United States. It brings the very best young talent to work jointly between a university and an agency to address a specific problem. It's relatively low cost and often allows agencies to explore bigger problems to decide where you may want to direct future resources. So we're suggesting a collaborative 2015 fellows solicitation. And finally, as I'm sure everyone here is acutely aware, how do we actually communicate science? So the Delta Stewardship Council in February 2015 will be hosting the National Science Foundation Science Being the Messenger workshop. We will be sending you information. It's in your package. It's limited enrollment, unfortunately, but we would like to get as broad a representation across the agencies and interests as possible. So now we'll return to the first two points which we laid out, which is what we would like to achieve today. And perhaps I'll turn it back to Chair Fiorini to you lead the discussion on these two points.
Dr. Goodwin, thanks. First of all, any general reaction to the presentation? Mary?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to thank Dr. Goodwin for putting in the Agaria densa weed on, I'm not quite sure what slide it is, but under 2015 Priorities of Collaborative Science. I really like that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
See the...
We see a pattern.
Well, let me help to focus the conversation around the table then. The first thing I'm looking for, and I recommend, is to accept the interim science action agenda collectively as a group. In support of this, you will find a one-page memo consists of about three paragraphs addressed to me from the Delta Independent Science Board. They have reviewed the interim science action agenda, recently conducted a meeting, offered suggestions. The document that is now for your review that consists of 320 actions listed as a result of the interviews conducted with all of your agencies and others has been updated based on the Independent Science Board's review, and they are recommending that this is it should serve as a roadmap for science activities in the Delta. So, reaction to that. Chuck?
Nice piece of work, Dr. Goodwin. Thank you. But I don't understand yet what accept means. And in your PowerPoint, not numbered, there's a slide that's like, how will the interim science action agenda be used? So tell me, when I vote affirmatively today, even though we don't vote, that I accept this, then what? Like, my department can only do science if it's in here, or we'll work with the other entities at the table to try to join forces and do science around these topical areas in a solicited way? I mean, what next?
Well, that's a great question, and it's of course listed on this next slide. Well, first of all, there's two things here. There may be activities which you're undertaking in your agency. You have to do it. It's part of your legal mandate. You have the staff on board to do it. But there's an awful lot of big things out there that need to be done collectively across the different scientific disciplines to understand this bigger picture of what's going on. And this is really where the science action agenda your focus is. So usually you take any action within your agency, there are going to be other possible consequences associated with that action that you may not have the expertise or the staff or the scientists on board. So you could break out from what your issues. We really would like to understand these additional consequences because it could have an effect on, unintended consequences on flooding, for example. You probably want to bring the best possible hydrodynamic modelers and flood folks to that who may already be working on that hydrodynamic modeling for other reasons like the yellow bypass and things like that. So it's a way for you to focus around these other issues on these big topics which are currently you cannot cover in-house, or it makes more sense to collaborate with other agencies because you can do it more efficiently, faster, and cheaper.
In this document, it sounds like you have collected major areas of concern to many of us which are not yet fully explored. And our department could use this interim agreement and agenda to keep track of those items, join forces with where possible, and then benefit from the science that's done under the action areas.
That's correct. Plus give guidance in the future as you see this science coming out. Is that getting where you need to go?
Okay.
Is that helpful? Will? By the way, Will, you started this in April, and I have some quotes here I could read if you don't remember what you said.
Well, what I'd suggest, actually, is why don't you let me ask my questions, and then you can trap me by reading my quotes back to me. No doubt I'll step in it. Peter, first of all, thank you for this. This is a good piece of work. Let me, though, press you on a couple of points to follow up on Chuck's observations. This interim action agenda strikes me more as a big basket of stuff that has been culled from interviews with a variety of organizations and researchers as to what their top five things are. And on the basis of those extensive interviews, you've compiled a bundle of 314 ideas or topics. And then you've sort of shaken that bundle a little bit and had them categorized into 17 different topics, as you've enumerated here. Those topics are very broadly cast, both in and of themselves and collectively. So when I read them, I don't see an agenda, nor do I see a direction or a roadmap. I see a comprehensive, broadly scoped list of important topics. I believe that what you're doing, where you are, is in an early stage of focusing, narrowing, and prioritizing. So I don't mean my observation to be fundamentally critical, but more simply to note where this effort is. But I do note, and getting to Chuck's point, I'm not quite sure what you're asking us to commit to when we look at that list of 17 very broadly framed topics, and I'm not sure how you see them as either an agenda or as a roadmap. So maybe you could spell out a little bit more of next steps in how you see refining and focusing.
Peter, can I weigh in just very briefly? The Interim Science Action Agenda is as you have described, and I'll let Peter add more to it. But from the perspective of walking us through some decisions or suggestions today, we have to begin at a starting point. And so the Interim Science Action Agenda, the 320 actions that have been collected, and this is the first time that this work has ever been done. It is a magnificent piece of work, but it's only a starting point. And so I call to your attention items 1 and 2 on the screen before you as the next steps. If we agree that this work represents the overview of the necessary science activities underway or planned in the Delta, then we can get to prioritizing, but we can't go there unless we accept this document as a starting point. So now, Peter, you can give the scientific explanation.
No, I think Randy captured it very well. This was an attempt to understand what are the common interests and the science questions. So one of the things that the science community have pointed out is that if you silo science to individual problems, many of these problems require many of the same information, bathymetry, hydrodynamic modeling, water quality, things like that. And a problem over here will require many of those same basic tools, but they're looking at a slightly different problem. So the attempt to categorize, to bin those science questions around those topics, was to see how could that be brought together so that similar tools, not a single tool, but multiple tools could be built together. You've done in comparison, you run three models simulating similar things side by side, you learn a lot more. So the attempt was made in here to try and focus the science questions to avoid overlap and duplication, and by focusing those resources to get the very best science out there. So this, if you like, describes a science scape. What's important to all of the different agencies? What are their questions? The next step, which is why it takes so long to put these together, if you know Puget Sound, Columbia Basin, how long that took together, is now to take this and start to prioritize things. What are the basic tools? What are we missing in terms of data? What are the limitations of the models that we should be thinking about developing for the next generation? And so what you're suggesting is absolutely right. It's the next step. The Independent Science Board had a lot to say about that too. But this is just, to our knowledge, the first time that such an in-depth analysis has been done of what are the needs, what are the independent science review panels saying, what's the ISB in one place. The next step over the coming months is to take that and then start crafting it into the science action agenda that I think you're asking for. But for that, the ISB was saying, so how do you come up with priorities? What sort of process do you go through? And so what we're suggesting here is two things. There's probably a few things which we can start right now in 2015 to see how this process would work. How do we work together? Is it a common PSP, common science fellows, directed actions? CAMPT, I think, is just evolving into a really good example. It's been tough, but it's showing people can work together. And if for those of you who listened to the independent science panel last Friday quizzing the CAMPT on the smelt issues, I think there you're really beginning to see a science community evolving around a problem. Just how that group of scientists from across the board, NGOs, agencies, PWAs, were actually supporting one another, defending the science that they're putting out. So I think what you're saying is absolutely right. That's where we need to be. I think we have to have your guidance and thoughts on how we move to the full science action agenda. But that's coming up. It's going to take a few months. We would love to get your guidance on that. But also, what would you like to see happening in 2015? So does that get to the question?
Chuck? Chair, what I think I hear you asking is, if I'm listening well, can you live with using the interim document, asking your smartest science or policy managers in the department to work with other staff, create that prioritization process, develop the final agenda, and along the way, if you uncover collaborative science opportunities for the calendar year of 2015, act on them?
That's a very good summary.
Okay.
That's what we're asking for.
Okay.
And yes, Mark?
Yeah, thank you. USGS does a lot of science in the Delta. I've been engaged there for a long time, and I've got to say that I really support the science plan concepts, especially the importance of synthesis and the value of the collaborative science. The concepts clearly need some refinement, as you just mentioned, but speaking for us, for USGS, you know, we're willing to put people and resources toward these next steps, because I think that's the only way we're going to get to the better, more defined, more refined view of where to go next. So just a word of support there.
Mark?
I appreciate the clarification, and you know, at this point, I'm ready to endorse this as an interim science agenda. I think what you hear us asking and pondering is how we get beyond that, and we're anxious to get to that discussion. In particular, as we think about how to prioritize and how to actually create a work plan and budget to carry out a significant portion of this agenda, I'm interested in how we will assess what's the delta between what we're going to be able to accomplish within our existing budgets and constraints and what do we want to accomplish, and to endeavor to create some shared incentives to create the necessary budget in order to accomplish a bigger part of the agenda.
If the interim science action agenda as it stands today is the beginning point, then what we're asking for is a commitment from every agency to dedicate science and policy managers to meet collectively and to evaluate what's on that list and to come back at our next meeting in April and provide us with some priorities. So in that, I think we will achieve shared funding, greater efficiencies, and a greater focus on whatever it is that's determined to be in support of carrying out the Delta Plan, the California Water Action Plan. So that's what we're asking for. Chuck?
Well, I'm with Mark on a yes, so long as I can get an asterisk next to it, not knowing whether it's going to rain a lot or zero between now and April, because I have limited, very smart and engaging folks who would probably get this as a double duty.
Letty.
Okay. I've been hesitating to raise my hand because having someone from Washington, D.C. volunteer the time of the agency's scientists who are already about triple booked is perhaps not the wisest thing. So, but I wanted to hear from Mark and Dan. But I guess I just want to sort of take a step back. Yes, we're raring to go. Yes, we want to be further down the road. But, I mean, we have needed this for so long. Certainly, you know, I'm sort of a relative newcomer by Delta standards, only 5.5 years. But but it brings me back to the National Research Council reports. It's everything. I mean, this is key. And yes, we want to be the next step down that road, and we're not going to get there unless we keep pushing hard. And yes, the asterisk that Chuck gives, mm-hmm. because between the drought and BDCP and the biops and the remand and the, you know, the list, it's too much for our folks. But we have to do it.
Any objection? All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I could have
yes.
a quick comment. I apologize for bad timing. Since everything that's in here affects each, if not collectively, all of the five Delta counties, I would like to see if there's a way we could integrate outreach with the five Delta counties on your list of organizations and collaborations. We even have an acronym. It's DCC. And secondly, recognize the significant and heroic lifting that is accompanying this document. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark?
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to mention, Peter. It's not in your two major points there, but you talked about bringing innovative technologies to bear. USGS established the Innovation Center for Earth Sciences a couple of years ago. It's based out of our Menlo Park office. And the idea there is to leverage, well, basically the way I look at it is, if you get a bunch of scientists around the table and they say, boy, if only we could do this particular technological thing, and then to be able to bring NASA, Silicon Valley, and Carnegie Mellon, and all of these other basically really great think tanks to bear. So we've had a lot of success on that last couple of years, and we could ask our center director to work with your folks and kind of brainstorm on how you might, well, lessons we've learned. There's lots of different ways to do it, but lessons that we've learned on making something like this work.
Okay, so Taryn Ravazzini and Dr. Rainer Honecke, our Deputy Executive Officer of the Science Program, will be the two point people from the Stewardship Council contacting each one of your agencies to determine who you would like to have us interact with on science and the policy fronts, recognizing limitations on time. But it's nice that this group meets every 6 months because it gives us a target date to bring you something back. So I am going to conclude that we are in support of the first recommendation before you to commit science and policy managers to work collectively with the Delta Science Program over the next 6 months to, one, determine a science prioritization process, and two, identify high-impact science activities for near-term implementation. That it will be a significant step forward if we can accomplish that, Dr. Goodwin, in 6 months. Now, there's one other item related to science, and this was really triggered by a report that Chuck Bonham made to the Water Commission 3 or 4 weeks ago when he said, if I knew where the fish were and how many of them were there, we could operate the system more efficiently and probably utilize the water more efficiently. So that led me to asking a lot of questions in our science shop about, well, what is the state of monitoring? And I understand the IEP has determined to apply some new technology to monitoring in the Delta this next year. But Dr. Goodwin indicated to me that there is a huge need to scope a comprehensive assessment of Bay Delta system monitoring. So that's the next ask for those of you around the table. Would you be willing to commit some folks to take a step down that road in scoping a comprehensive assessment of Bay Delta system monitoring? Chuck, your light's on.
What do you mean? My light is on. Maybe. And I'm just thinking real time. There may be some benefit to allowing a couple of months to progress because at least six of the agencies at this table are literally, as we speak today, doing a portion of what you're proposing. And if you might be willing to, like, convene your scoping exercise in a quarter from now, meaning 3-4 months, it might actually be able to move faster than if we try to organize such a dialogue now. And I believe it'll be those very same six agencies which will have the most up-to-date and practical experience on what a system-wide monitoring improvement should look like. I can't speak for the other five or six folks who are working on it. And
other comments? So, sounds like a good suggestion to me. Dr. Goodwin?
Now that sounds an excellent way forward. And absolutely.
Okay. Will.
Peter, a couple of thoughts. First of all, in your earlier response to my query, what I heard you say, I think, was in part delving into those 17 major topic areas. In delving into those 17 major topic areas, you were looking to identify some of the common currencies or data or monitoring that may be being utilized in those different topic areas by different groups unknowingly that it's also being used elsewhere. So what I was hearing you suggest in part was looking for some common currencies that can be more broadly utilized and invested in. And that then for me translates into monitoring and looking at the system-wide monitoring landscape, if you will, in order to understand where the efficiencies and opportunities lie. I think Chuck is right that we're deeply embedded in that exercise right now in real time in a very difficult drought year. That said, I think that engaging in that kind of probe, if you will, on how to expand the efficiencies and efficacy of the monitoring investments is hugely valuable. I would only encourage you to make sure you go beyond those who are currently doing the individual monitoring programs so you get beyond simply a mine's the best.
Right. Okay, Dan?
So, Peter, I have one question for you, and I agree with what others have said. Timing-wise, how does this concept of the modeling summit fit in with this monitoring effort? One of the things we lack in a lot of respects are models that help inform our choices about monitoring. Do you see some synergy between that activity and this one?
Yes, absolutely. And then I would also add to that the big data management with the data streams we've got coming. Those three are all totally linked. And I think the planning committees that have been putting these together, there's overlap between those groups for sure. And so with the modeling summit, just to be clear, we have not yet convened the planning group for that yet. So we're very much in the early stages. So please, certainly your staff will be informed. If you have personal interest, we'll keep you an update on exactly the scope of what the modeling summit would cover. But your basic comment is absolutely right. Modeling can be used to inform monitoring and vice versa.
So thanks. You don't need to provide it now, but kind of the vision for how these, now you've got three activities moving ahead, or at least envisioned to move ahead. Your vision is to how those three fit together, because that'll help us figure out how to integrate our people into each of those activities and bring them together ultimately in the most informative manner possible.
Yeah. And what I would actually suggest on that, Dan, is we've obviously thought about that a lot, but I think with this subgroup that will be looking at those your priorities, that may be a great venue to explore that further, so it is broadly representative of the management and scientific community.
Okay. Any other comments regarding science? Mark.
So just as a follow-up, something Chuck said made me think that I might not be visualizing this this second item the same way as others might. Can you give just a real thumbnail sketch of, setting aside for the moment the idea of postponing it, but how did you envision that happening?
Okay, so there's several elements of that in this rapidly changing system. If you look at how much of the monitoring has grown up, and I'll sort of pick on the USGS, one of the pieces of information that we all rely on heavily is the network that you've put out there initially for measuring water surface elevation and flows. It was piecemealed together over many years. It's absolutely critical for understanding how the delta functions. Yet it was a piecemeal effort. If we're going to be going through massive changes, whether it's invasive species, landscape changes, what we had heard was not so much the data that's being collected, but what is the fundamental experimental design? How are you going to use that data to interpret, to make statistical inference of what's happening? What sort of statistical techniques are you going to use? How many years are you going to need to collect data before you can actually detect change that isn't lost in the noise? So what we were thinking is this was much more of a The theoretical look at the statistical underpinnings. Secondly, with new innovations coming online, if there's more efficient ways of doing it, you don't want to just suddenly stop a 30 or 40-year data stream. So what sort of protocols might you have to transition from one technology to another? And I know the USGS is really the gold standard in that sort of technology transfer and how you do the design. So that was really the purpose of what we were looking at. And what we had also heard from the science community during the Delta Science Plan was that this needed to go to look very broadly, not just around single issues like the aquatic resources. So that was the idea, what we were thinking, bring together the very best biostatisticians that are already working in the system, bring in a few outsiders from the agencies, academia, and just take a hard look at the structure. Are we using, are we really using the state of the art? What sort of flexibility are we going to have in the future as things change? So if you're interested, of course, there's been a lot more put out on that.
Well, one follow-up. So I was focusing on the term scope, a comprehensive assessment, as opposed to conduct one. So did I misinterpret that?
No, sorry, it's the scope.
Okay.
Jane?
Yes, I just wanted to say that I appreciate all the effort that went into getting this to this stage, and perhaps as an agency that's not currently in the thick of the six agencies that Chuck referred to and kind of looking at current monitoring systems and whether those provide the data that we need now to understand current conditions. I also want to be really mindful of, as we think about the investments that are going to be made, that we are developing data that help us understand whether we're getting the kind of results that we're putting all this money in to achieve. And that when we talk, we get to the part where we're talking about kind of the workshop and how folks communicate this, that we're able to describe with a base of data and using models and using whatever other scientific tools we have, that we can actually really describe to people the problem the problem we're trying to solve, and the solutions that we have achieved results with. So I just wanted to offer that as well.
Great. Thank you. I think that completes the comments associated with file item 3B. Are there any public comments to be made? Then we'll move on to file item. Melinda, there's a microphone up here. Please identify yourself and welcome.
Melinda Terry, representing California Central Valley Flood Control Association, and I'll turn in my blue card as soon as I'm done speaking. I listened on the webcast a little bit earlier of the presentations on the Yolo Bypass, for instance. And so when it comes to integration, and I've just read through this science thing, and it's not really clear to me what exactly is being integrated when I read the Delta Science Plan priority actions anyway. It seems to focus on water supply. So, for instance, it talks about on page 2 the water management and water supply reliability, and then on the other next page it's talking about working with NGOs and public water agencies. And so, again, that leads me to think it's a CVP, SWP, and that's an important part that we definitely need to integrate. But it's not clear to me, for instance, that the flood stuff is being integrated, so I would hope and suggest maybe broadening and making it clear that the documents are then also really trying to get a handle on how the science can help the flood side as well to be able to answer some of the questions that we have in terms of some of these, but also just to also think about during integration of how you need to think about what the consequences of having to deal with certain things. So, for instance, the state's assurances that has given to the federal government, the Army Corps in this case, regarding the management of something like the Yolo Bypass to maintain a 1957 design profile, and what those consequences are to the state for not doing that, and therefore how the science can help, you know, really identify how we can design these in a way that meets those dual objectives, so that the state and the locals don't get dinged at the back end for trying to help out on the water supply by using a flood facility. And also to help us really deal with, coming up with maybe short-term and long-term on something like a vegetation management policy that the Army Corps has. Because in the short term, we have to deal with what they have now, not with what we hope they will revise pursuant to WERDA legislation asking them to do revisions. Really, because those are consequences if we don't comply with some of those things, and I didn't really see the integration in there of that.
Okay, thank you for that. Anyone else? Then on to file item 3C. As Cindy Messer, our Deputy Executive Officer of the Delta Stewardship Council, and Eric Vink, Executive Director of the Delta Protection Commission, come forward, the reason we're highlighting this is it's an issue that touches every agency around the table. In the Delta Reform Act of 2009, there is a requirement placed on the Stewardship Council to establish a levy prioritization strategy. That work has begun. Many of your agency staff have already been engaged and will continue to be, as well as a funding mechanism that the Delta Protection Commission has been working on, and in the levy assessment district evaluation work has also begun. So Cindy and Eric are going to update us on those and provide you an opportunity to ask any questions. Cindy?
Great, thank you.
Welcome.
And thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today to give you a little information about the Delta Stewardship Council's Delta Levy Investment Strategy and the work that we've been undertaking since July of this year. What I'd like to do today, I know our Chief Deputy gave you an introduction to this topic in April, so I'll very quickly run us through an overview of the strategy, talk a little bit about why we're doing it, what we're doing, what the expected outcomes will be of this, and just a little bit about process in terms of how we'll get to those expected outcomes. And then what I'd like to do throughout the presentation is to really touch upon the opportunities for agency engagement and stakeholder engagement. I'll hit on that quite a few times because we realize this is such a critical element to developing the levy investment strategy and ensuring successful outcome. And I'd also like to note before I launch into the PowerPoint presentation that this is really an update. If you'll recall in the Delta Plan, in Chapter 7, our risk reduction chapter, we actually have a set of interim priorities for state investments and Delta levies. So this process that we're undertaking now will allow us to update those interim priorities. So, go on. Awesome, thank you. Oops. There we go. Okay, and I know Chairman Fiorini touched a little bit upon why we're doing this. We're mandated to do so. What I've provided here are the two water code sections out of the Delta Reform Act that specifically provide us with our direction and our guidance in developing this levy investment strategy. And I don't think I probably need to read through them verbatim. The only thing I do want to point out before moving on is in water code section 85306, you'll see that it talks about working in consultation with the Flood Board to recommend in the Delta Plan priorities for state investments in the Delta, and that it includes levies that are both part of the state plan of flood control as well as non-project levies. And I point this out only in that it increases the scope of this project, and it increases the number and the scope of the agencies that we need to be interacting with as we undertake developing this levy investment strategy. Okay, so I'm going to work backwards a little bit in this presentation. I thought what I'd do is start with the outcomes, run through those, and then we'll talk a little bit about how we get there. And so there are three primary outcomes we anticipate in developing this investment strategy, and they'll populate up here one at a time, but let me walk through them, each one individually. So obviously the first outcome is to develop a comprehensive strategy that establishes state investment priorities for project and non-project Delta levy operations, maintenance, and improvements. And this strategy will help ensure that the state uses both a coordinated and systematic approach towards improving public safety, ecosystem conditions, and economic sustainability in the Delta and for the state. And the strategy itself, the way we're developing it, it'll utilize extensive stakeholder engagement. It will also include an independent peer review panel, which I'll talk about in a little bit more detail in just a few minutes. And they'll be reviewing both our approach to developing the strategy as well as the methodology. And then lastly, we'll be developing this strategy in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, as well as the 2009 Delta Reform Act requirements. So part of the comprehensive strategy and the three bullet items I've listed on the slide here, are three of the key components that'll be part of this investment risk reduction strategy. And the first one is a tiered ranking of investments for the Delta Islands and levees. And you can think about this in terms of projects and other types of investments. The strategy will also contain recommendations on different levels of protection by the Delta levees throughout the region. And lastly, the strategy will consist of a methodology that looks at allocating costs amongst the different categories of beneficiaries, which we're working to identify as we work through developing the strategy. So that's the first primary outcome from this effort. The second is, and I touched upon this a minute ago, is updating the Delta Plan and some of its provisions. Again, we currently have a regulatory policy in the plan that has interim priorities. We will look to update that particular regulatory policy, possibly other provisions, recommendations in the plan, and of course narrative that will include new information that we've gained or learned through developing this investment strategy and undertaking this process. And then the last outcome we anticipate is the generation of a computer-based decision-making tool. And this is a tool that will look at different information, including island conditions, levee conditions, assets that are protected by levees, the categories of beneficiaries, threats and hazards to the levees in the region. And it will take a look at all of that information and be able to compare it against primary state goals and objectives. And I'll talk a little bit more. I have one slide that kind of gives you a visual of what this tool can do. And in that, when I get there, I'll talk about how we got this idea and how this fits into the decision-making process as we move through developing the strategy. So I'll kind of leave you hanging for just a few minutes on that one. Oops. Yep, I think I'm there. Okay. So this slide, I realize, is a little bit hard to read, but I really just have a few take-home messages from this. And this is taking a step back. This is walking you through the process and giving you a sense of where we're at today with developing the strategy. So what we've done is we've divided this effort into six phases, starting in July of this year, and then this effort will go through June of 2016. So we've completed phase one that started back in July, ended in September, and that was really our getting ourselves organized phase, getting the team together and developing a roadmap to move ahead. Where we're at right now is in phase two, and that started in October, will take us through December of this year. And phase two is focused on really three different things. The first is having really detailed discussion and evaluation of the state's interests, its goals and objectives this investment strategy will address. Taking a look at performance metrics that we will be able to measure our success through implementing this investment strategy, and then compiling data. This is really where at least myself and much of the project team have been focused. So something to note in this effort, we'll be using existing information and data. We will not be generating any new data through this process. So we've been spending a lot of time working with our partner agencies, working with stakeholders to figure out all of the data sets that are out there that we can tap into that give us information about levee conditions, assets, beneficiaries, threats and hazards. And all of this information will ultimately be fed into this computer-based tool. So, and also in phase two, and I should note, they're not quite as bright up there on the slideshow, but I've put red stars into the four of the six phases that I've got outlined here. And that was to remind me that these to state that these are the phases where we anticipate heavy, heavy agency participation and engagement, as well as the broader stakeholder groups out there. So in phase two, where we're at right now, we've begun to launch our stakeholder engagement, agency outreach. We've been trying to schedule as many meetings as we possibly can to talk to groups and organizations and individuals. We have done presentations and briefings, and we're getting ready to do our first public workshop during the week of December 8th, where we'll go out and we'll provide the same sort of overview of the project, and again, talk about the inputs this tool, introduce stakeholders to the computer-based tool as well. So that's phase two. Phase three, we shift our focus to looking at risks. So we do risk analysis, again, using existing information, look at the probabilities of risk by Delta Island and Track, look at the consequences. And we'll begin to take a look at risk reduction options and what those might look like. But we won't get into that phase too heavily until we move into, or that topic until we move into phase four. But I wanted to note that on the graphic towards the bottom, we have the independent peer review. And that this process will begin towards the end of phase three. And I wanted to acknowledge Dr. Goodwin and the Delta Science Program, who will be coordinating this particular effort, convening the panel, and have developed the charge for the panel. And I'd like to point out that for this particular peer review process, we will be asking these panel members to focus on our approach to developing the strategy as well as the methodology. So they'll be taking a look at the data that we're using, the inputs, how we're approaching it, and how we intend. They'll also have an introduction to the tool as well. So how we intend to use this data, mesh it with our primary goals and objectives, and come out with a suite of alternatives that will help us maximize benefits and achieve multiple objectives. The independent peer review panel obviously will ensure that we are using the best available science and the best available information that is out there. And I would just like to say that we have appointed the 7 panel members, still working through some of the logistics, but a fine group of nationally and internationally recognized experts in different areas, such as, of course, flood management, resiliency, environmental impacts, social, human and social issues, economics. So we've tried to bring expertise in to cover all the different facets that would be part of this strategy. And in fact, we have one panel member who comes to us with extensive background and knowledge and experience in the Netherlands working on their levee system and levee issues there. So we feel very good about this panel and good about the fact that they will help us build a very solid technical foundation for this project that we're undertaking. Okay, so let me move through the rest of the phases very quickly. Phase four, this is where peer review panel goes on or is conducted. We get the recommendations back. We also mobilize the tool in this phase. And that requires a lot of iterative back and forth with agencies, stakeholders. We'll be producing different portfolios, if you will, or suites of different projects that we can take a look at and take a look at how at the impacts, the benefits, how they meet the various objectives. And then in phases five and six, phase five takes us to a lot of draft documents. So a draft strategy, a draft EIR, some proposed changes to our regulations. Again, in this phase, a lot of public review documents will be out there. We'll receive comments. We'll be reviewing the comments, responding, engaging with the council, engaging with agencies and stakeholders to walk through those comments and respond to them. And then that gets us eventually to phase six, which is the final phase where the council makes some final decisions about the strategy, about the proposed changes to regulation, and we move forward from there. So this next slide is the one I wanted to use to illustrate the decision-making tool, or computer-based decision-making tool. So this is a tool that was adapted from one that the RAND Corporation did for the state of Louisiana. And I should note that the RAND Corporation is also part of our consulting team, so we're very happy to have them on board. This was a tool that was developed for Louisiana post-Katrina when they wanted to have a strategic plan moving forward to take a look at how to address and maximize their two primary objectives, which are listed at the top of the slide, maximizing risk reduction and land building for the coastal boundaries of the state of Louisiana to help them ensure better protection against future natural disasters. So one of the things I've done is to circle in red the budget. So they actually had a known budget. It was quite a generous number. So in the tool, they were able to plug that dollar amount in. They had a suite of hundreds of different projects that they were looking at that generally fell into these five categories with the symbols next to them. So all sorts of different categories, restoration to structural and non-structural risk reduction projects. And the tool allowed them to put all the projects in, match that up against their primary objectives, and they were given different, or they generated different portfolios of projects, which came out of the tool had a way of illustrating, could it maximize one objective more than the other? Was it equally beneficial? What were the impacts? But more importantly than that, it allowed the state officials as well as all of the stakeholders to look at the trade-offs between the different portfolios of projects. And what the RAND Corporation, along with the state officials, did was to take these portfolios out to all of the stakeholders and to have really frank discussion about the pluses and minuses of the portfolios. And it allowed the stakeholders to provide really good in-depth information about the trade-offs and their concerns, obviously. And at the end of this process, the state was able to come up with a portfolio that maximized benefits for both of their objectives within their budget. And in fact, they developed their 2012 strategic plan, which they presented to the state legislature, and it was unanimously approved. And they're implementing the plan now. So this is our template. Obviously, there are a few differences we recognize, but we felt like it made a lot of sense to use a similar approach and to utilize a tool like this to help us with decision making, not to make the decisions, but to provide us with some information towards that end, I should say.
Cindy, I promised everybody that they would be finished here by 4, so let's try and speed through the remaining slides and transition to Eric's report.
Okay, great. I think really my last three slides, and I can sum them up very quickly, is about about agency coordination and participation as well as stakeholder. I've listed included a bunch of logos on this particular slide. You will recognize many of them. Obviously, these are agencies, including many here at the table, that we need your participation in this process. Our goal is to make this very open and transparent. We also need your technical expertise from your staff and your management. So I'm going to move ahead because we'll talk about how we're engaging stakeholders as well. This is just a list to give you a sense of the universe of stakeholders we're thinking of, we're reaching out to. We've tried to include all sorts of categories. Would definitely welcome input if we've forgotten any. And then this is my last slide, and this is really about engagement techniques and activities. We're looking at doing this in many different ways. So I mentioned we're doing meetings and briefings, and we're holding workshops. I've listed that here. The first bullet, really, I just wanted to point out that right now we are trying to meet with as many technical experts as we can to help us, again, build a solid technical foundation to understand if there's information and data out there we haven't accessed already. We're doing that through what we call our technical resources pool, included the names of many individuals, usually at the staff level or management level from agencies, but also reclamation districts, environmental groups, and so on. Sent an invite out to these folks to get them to come to workshops and meetings to help provide us with some input. Meetings and briefings, moving to the second bullet here, public meetings and workshops. We'll have a series of at least 4 of those throughout the project. And the easiest way to get information about that is through our online means. So we have a web page dedicated to this effort on the council's website, and we'll be posting all sorts of materials there. I know you have the 4-page fact sheet in your binders. Information like that will be on the website. We're developing a calendar so we can keep all the meetings current, so different stakeholders know when to plug in and what the topics will be at these various meetings and workshops. And then obviously we're available to meet and brief with whoever would desire to have more detailed discussion about the effort. So with that, I think I turn it over to Eric.
Great. Thank you, Sandy.
Sure.
Eric, Levy Assessment District.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Delta Flood Risk Management Assessment District is a complementary effort to what Cindy just described. It's a new type of assessment district that would have fee assessment authority for flood protection, that is levy improvements in the Delta, and emergency preparedness. This was a recommendation that was initially made in the Commission's Economic Sustainability Plan. It was later incorporated into the Delta Plan. It's also included in the Governor's Water Action Plan. And the feasibility study that we're about to undertake, or that we will be undertaking in the coming months, will accomplish a couple of things. One is to address the current context. What are existing funding sources, institutions, and procedures? It will complete a beneficiary analysis. Who are Delta levy beneficiaries? What's the level of benefit they receive? What's the current financial contribution from those beneficiaries and their ability to contribute towards such an effort? And then finally, the $64,000 question, which was, how would such a district be formed and function? And this is especially important in relation to existing institutions such as local levy maintenance organizations and reclamation districts in the Delta. And just to be incredibly brief, why this is important, and with that I'll conclude. First off, there's really an obligation to ensure that life and property in the Delta are protected from flooding, and this can help accomplish that. And secondly, whether you believe the Delta tunnels will get built or not, Delta levees under any scenario are going to play a critical role in ensuring the operation of the Delta export system. And there's also benefits to recreation that the Delta provides. There's a local economy that's reliant upon these levees. Those are all important factors as well. But with that, I will conclude, unless there are any questions, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
See, I got you back on schedule.
Thank you very much. Comments, response, questions? Supervisor Pifo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the lead agency to advise the Council on matters relating to preserving the Delta as an evolving place, the Delta Protection Commission is convening a working group of agencies responsible for implementing recommendations in the Delta's plan related to Chapter 5, as well as other activities that enhance and preserve the unique Delta values. And the Commission plans on having a report back at the April meeting. And Eric, unless I missed something, that concludes my comments, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
Yeah, good point.
Anyone else? Certainly, the participation and the level of cooperation that's already existed in support of the levy investment strategy is greatly appreciated. Cindy mentioned the technical pool of experts that have been identified and will be drawn upon heavily from agencies and stakeholders to effectively produce a good product. Director Cowan, in our last meeting, you highlighted the need to finance things. And the map that she showed of the Louisiana coastline, I had them circle the $50 billion. I really like that. Yeah.
We all do, yeah.
And the whole price for the Louisiana purchase was $3 million.
Inflation.
And Mr. Chairman, yes. It's also worth noting and giving a nod to Department of Water Resources. They are funding both of these efforts, and we appreciate their support for the Flood Risk Management Assessment District. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. All right. There will be more at our next meeting, an update on the progress on both these fronts. Thank you both very much. That concludes file item 3C. Any public comment regarding this? Okay, Melinda's in the running for the most public comments at one meeting.
Thank you. Melinda Terry, California Central Valley Flood Control Association. And first of all, I just really want to thank the Stewardship Council because they have been very good about trying to talk to our folks very early on and get preliminary comments from them. And that's really nice. And we look forward to the continuation of that. And we just recently had one of those preliminary discussions. And so the only thing I would add, you know, something for a group like this, who you all wear different hats as well, is we think the modeling tool that we were shown is probably very good, particularly for the back end of figuring out the allocation of when you kind of design projects a certain way and you can have, you know, maybe some ecosystem here or more robust to protect for water supply. Those all make sense. But we think we might have a little bit of forest for the trees kind of situation here where we might have overlooked really looking at what some of the state's overall goals and objectives should be. So, for instance, if a big goal is to reduce the frequency, duration, and severity of flood damage in the Delta, then what are some of the objectives, for instance, that you could have that would fall underneath that? So, for instance, one of them could be, and then figuring out what the benefits and consequences are of those. So, for instance, to achieve that would be, trying to comply with the assurances given to the federal government, the Army Corps, and the 1953 MOU to keep the state plan of flood control to a 1957 design profile so that the flood capacity at each reach, you know, is being met. That's how we can reduce the risk. And the consequences of not doing that are we lose federal funding for rehabilitation. The 100% payment by the federal government of the repair of a levee after a federal event if we're not keeping PL 8499, which is kind of, I would put that as a second objective. Another consequence or benefit, you could look at it both ways, is FEMA. We actually lost an MOU with FEMA because of our failure to make adequate progress to getting PL 8499 going for the Delta levees, and because they got upset after the 1986, the number of failures. On the good news standpoint, we've made incredible progress since 2006 because of the bond funding. And 2006 was actually a real high water event, and we did not have failures. So there are objectives, I guess, and then the actions, you know, that go along with those objectives. That really then, you know, another big goal I would say for the state would be, how do you maximize the value that the state gets out of the investments that it makes? And the examples, so what that means to me is it translates into multi-benefits. You know, how can we maximize getting the water supply benefits for the rest of our state, versus the flood protection, versus, you know, the other long-term really infrastructure things that we have to think about when it comes to the Delta. We've got huge energy transmission, energy production and delivery transmission that goes through there. Our transportation, both the road system and shipping. So those are the multi-objectives that you can achieve. And so that's the forest for the trees, where I feel like we kind of might have missed that. And it would help identify how to, for all of you, you know, how to kind of give, you know, something that is trying to achieve a little bit of all of that at the same time protecting the state prior investments that they've made, as well as the future things that they might need for the transportation, energy, water supply, and flood protection. Thanks.
Thank you, Melinda. Any other public comment? Okay. Yes.
Hi, Randy. Thank you. Thank you. My name's Rajin Reynolds. I'll turn my blue slip later. I live on the south end of Roberts Island. We talked a lot today about science and the interface between science and public policy. I think it's very important when you take your scientific findings out to the public that you represent them correctly. And I want to read you a quote. As an independent agency, and this is from Randy Fiorini to the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California's Bay Delta Committee. As an independent state agency regarding BDCP, one is as the responsible agency, we have commented from time to time on the progress of the BDCP. The Independent Science Board, 10 internationally respected scientists who serve the council to advise us on science matters, They reviewed the EIR-EIS document recently and had lots of good things to say about that document. They had a few comments about the need to add a little more rigor to the adaptive management component, but overall it was a very positive report submitted on the BDCP-EIRS. That's our chairman. This is one comment from the review of the draft BDCP-EIR-EIS by the Delta Independent Science Board, and this is what they said. We find that the DEIR-DEIS currently falls short of meeting this good enough scientific standard. So there's the disconnect. The Independent Science Board, in 8 very critical points, brought out the deficiencies of the BDCP-EIR-EIS. But it was taken to that public panel in Southern California and represented as adequate. Do you have any questions?
Any other public comment? All right. Then I'm going to make an executive decision to finish on time. File item number 4, dealing with the Delta plan performance measures. Keith Coolidge was prepared to provide an update on the activities related to that. I'm going to postpone that for 6 months. Keith, I think, will volunteer to provide a memo briefing you in writing on what he intended to share with you today, in the interest of saving time. So, Keith, my apologies, but there's going to be a full report given to the Delta Stewardship Council at the December meeting. So we will provide you an update following that. So that moves us on to file item number 5. It's at this point that we summarize what has been discussed and to ask for any further items that you wish to offer up for consideration before this committee, or assign for next steps for the next meeting. So far, I have, and Taryn, if you could come to the table and help me. So far, in summary, we have received an update on the work underway to help coordinate the activities within the Yolo Bypass. Chris Chernell has indicated that in 6 months he hopes to have an update on that and to further identify opportunities that exist as he continues his work. We have discussed the interim science action agenda and have accepted that as a general guideline or roadmap for science in the Delta, and have committed agency resources as available to help distill this large list down to some key priorities and action items that will be reviewed at the April meeting. We have an ongoing work underway with the levy investment strategy work. Every one of your agencies is involved in that, and we'll continue to support that work with an update coming in 6 months. Supervisor Pifo has suggested that we need to better coordinate the activities around dealing with invasive weeds in the Delta. We're familiar with at least 2 work groups that exist today. Campbell, you might be aware of some work that's underway. Mary, you are aware because you've led one of the efforts. So that highlights for your consideration what you would like to do moving forward in support of dealing with invasive aquatic weeds.
Are you asking for input?
Yes.
I think I had my ask on the table. It would be wonderful to have a greater collaboration of stakeholders at the table. Resources are always an issue, but permitting is an issue. local community involvement and engagement at the local, state, and federal level is an issue. We're working on building a comprehensive strategic plan Delta-wide. Whether you are an importer or an exporter of the resource of water from the Delta, it affects you directly, these invasive weeds. And the public is clamoring for support and assistance. It affects the economy, it affects the environment, it affects the ecosystem. It's just multi-collateral in damage and effect. So I'm happy to answer questions regarding who's not at the table. But we have USDA is at the table in a fringe way. Folks have retired, so we've lost some muscle, if you will. But the support from CDFA and Department of Interior, State Resources has been helpful, but we really need to get a more strategic, collaborative organization put behind the effort. So that's the ask. Maybe it's part of a working group strategy, Mr. Chairman. I would certainly defer to your consideration.
Okay. Any response or comments?
Campbell. I would just add that we've convened a group, had a couple meetings of the state and federal agencies to focus on the issue and look for places where we can coordinate and integrate and seek funding. And it sounds like a great opportunity to blend the efforts into one well-integrated effort and make more progress.
Okay, Taryn, that sounds like a work product. To coordinate and maybe blend the two existing groups that are working on this particular issue?
Certainly. If I may just go ahead then, I know Campbell, through the Conservancy, one of the work groups is generated. So if I may work directly with you in working on maybe connecting these two work groups. Thank you, Director Pifo.
There we go. My effort has, of course, been through the Delta Conservancy, also the Delta Protection Commission, but also somewhat ad hoc at the local level. And in the paper that I handed out with my mug on it, there is sort of a description of who's been at the table, who's at the table now. So if your name is missing, please join in.
Okay.
We'll work on
Very
that.
Good. Anything else that we have missed or I failed to summarize as next steps?
If I may make a point of clarification, with respect to the science policy interface agenda item, there was a discussion around the comprehensive assessment of Bay Delta system monitoring. And if I can just be clear, I believe we're tabling that to await the work that's already being done, and we can perhaps either check in with staff halfway through the 6 months before the meeting in April. Otherwise, we can perhaps bring that back up for discussion in April. I just wanted to clarify that.
That's my understanding. Okay. All right. Taryn, did I miss anything?
I hope not.
Okay. All right. Then I think, unless anyone else has any comments, Felicia, you've been pretty quiet today.
I'm trying to practice that whenever I can. I know it seems odd. I don't feel that well, too, but still. I'm just trying to do that. I just wanted to say thank you for all the hard work. In some ways, I know that you've been doing an awful lot of work engaging with all of us and also at a staff level, and I think the level of work that the team's been undertaking the past 6 months shows, and it's focused on what we said we wanted focused on. So I just wanted to thank you and the team for the responsiveness, and in some ways that's why I've been so quiet today. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. I'm going to call that a completion of file item 5. Any public comment on that? No. Okay. File item number 6 is public comment on anything in general. Any general public comments? If not, then I want to express my Mary.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask that we have a little more vigilance on slide numbers on our presentations. It's a pet peeve of mine at the Board of Supervisors, and when you go to discuss the slide, if you don't have a slide number in front of you, it's really hard to shuffle through. And there was Cindy's slide presentation had numbers on it, which was very helpful, but maybe it's something that we can think about. And lastly, and most importantly, we have a birthday in the room. Do we want to recognize that, Mr. Chairman?
No.
Are you sure?
I want to point out that at the far table, Pat and Angela, are the meeting coordinators at the Delta Stewardship Council, and I wish you could have seen them about 10 o'clock this morning frantically trying to pull together last-minute additions. So we will take note of the need to have page numbers, but I'm just so thankful that we got the PowerPoints in the computer and we're able to look at them today.
And
so,
granted, it's no small task. Happy birthday, Randy. Oh,
thank you. Okay, with that, a huge thank you to each and every one of you. Letty, for traveling all the way from Washington, D.C. to join us. Mark, welcome to the Interagency Implementation Committee. That concludes this meeting. Thank you for coming.